With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Steps Molina, drags it wide, the tension too much, the Granada fans turn away.
Lozano is on, you can see him in the middle of the box there.
Cross, and there is Lozano, and Cadiz with the goal, and it's an absolutely crucial goal. Look at the reaction of the fans. Absolute scenes in Mendizorroza with the Cadiz fans. It's Anthony Lozano with his seventh goal of the season. Momentarily, it takes Cadiz out of the bottom three and drops Granada into trouble. They've just missed a penalty. Tears in the eyes of the visiting Cadiz fans who can hardly believe it.
Hello, everyone. Yes, that was the decisive moment of Matchday 38 in the relegation battle in La Liga. Welcome along to La Liga Lowdown's Matchday 38 recap. I'm your host, Matt Clark, and I'm joined by the fabulous Rory Barlow once again. Granada are gone. They've been relegated just one season after being in the Europa League quarterfinals, and Cadiz and Mallorca are celebrating their survival in La Liga. Rory, what was your take on the drama as it unfolded on the final day?
Yeah, well, with apologies to Granada fans, it was fantastic entertainment. I was writing about it before. I think if it's the cruelest type of entertainment is when somebody, you know, somebody's not going to survive. Your kind of teams are on the precipice of going down, but that is what makes it so entertaining. I don't think anybody saw this coming. I think this was the biggest shock. I think this was the last combination of results that people saw almost was Granada going down, essentially. They came very close to winning this game, but ultimately wasn't enough. And the cruelest part of it all was that it was Jorge Molina who ultimately will probably bear a good bit of the responsibility, having done so much for them and having been such a brilliant centre-forward for Granada. Yeah, heartbreaking both for Los Nazaris and Molina himself.
Yeah, I mean, just on Molina, it's staggering, isn't it? Just a couple of weeks ago, he was pretty much MVP with that 6-2 win over Mallorca. And after that result, on the island of Mallorca, you're thinking there's no way Mallorca can survive. And Granada have just turned the corner and will be flying to safety. And to be fair, they've only lost one game under Aitor Karanka, which was away at Betis, which I'm sure we can forgive them. They just couldn't get the goal today. And like you say, Molina, from the penalty spot, 40-year-old against 40-year-old keeper Diego Lopez in goal. Just the cruelest way possible. He of course, missed a penalty for Getafe in the Europa League against Inter a couple of seasons ago, which could have made that tie all different. For him to be such a revelation player for Granada, do so well under first Diego Martinez and now this season too. It's just such a shame that it's him that missed the penalty. His record isn't great, it must be said. I think he's missed 7 of 16 penalties in La Liga. But, you know, he was the one with the huevos to step forward and take it. It's just gutting to see him at the end in tears. And he was consoled by Angel Herrera, who, of course, played for Granada last season, now with Espanyol. It just makes you think, doesn't it, what a job Diego Martinez did last season. Because even amid that incredible Europa League run, they were ninth in La Liga. This season, 18th. Just devastating for Granada. And where do they go from here? I mean, we've heard Heath many times talking about the off-field problems with sports management. But will they bounce back, do you think?
Well, I think it very much depends on kind of where they go and how they rebuild. I think it's quite an aging squad. It's not full of younger players, and I think that they'll be selling a lot of their talent. I don't think Luis Suarez will stay down there. Jorge Molina himself, I saw, if Bordalas stays, then maybe he'll go to Valencia and join him back there. But it's difficult to say, because I think the summer will define so much. But I did see someone, I think it was Ruben Morey, tweeting that this is what happens if you give the keys to Robert Moreno. And I think, obviously, he has a large chunk of the responsibility, but I think this is more what happens when you plan things so poorly. And it's what Heath said. If you do have three managers in the space of a season, the chances are that you're not going to achieve your objectives. And Granada, they've got more than enough quality to be staying in the division. Ultimately, as much as this is sort of a painful blow, and you look at the quality they have and how close they came, if you can't beat an Espanyol side that's been pretty limp at home, or pretty limp in recent weeks at home, you get a penalty and you have all the pressure. You just have to get the result. And you look at the other two teams, they went away from home. And Alaves, okay, they're maybe not the most difficult, but Osasuna are definitely the most difficult of the three. And it's Granada who came up shortest when it mattered most.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that about the coaches, because the three clubs that have gone down, Levante, Alaves, and of course now Granada, all three have got through three coaches in this season, which is pretty telling, I would suggest. I'm sure you'd concur mm-hmm. there. Sam Leveridge tweeting that, just imagine if Granada had appointed Carranca when they sacked Moreno, rather than having that kind of interim Ruben Torrecilla for a few weeks. I mean, admittedly, Torrecilla did okay, but Carranca's, he did revive them. And you just wonder, a couple more weeks, they could have got a couple more wins and they'd have been nowhere near danger. But as it is, they have fallen. And the way it unfolded was very dramatic. And it was 0-0 at halftime in all of the matches. You were messaging me saying, there's not a lot to talk about right now. and as it stood, it was Cadiz that were going to go down. Sergio was facing back-to-back final day relegations, but there was that spell. Granada missed a penalty, Jorge Molina pushing it wide, and then just a couple of minutes later, Cadiz make a substitution, bring on Choco Lozano. He scores at Mendizorroza in the pouring rain, and that's the goal that Cadiz need to take them to safety. And then Granada are throwing everything at it, and Carlos Bacca hits the post, 93rd minute, and it just didn't fall for them. And that's how it finished. So let's move on to the teams that have secured salvation. Cadiz and Mallorca. Rory, you've got a lot of love for Cadiz, and I'm pretty sure you want to apologise again for your Sergio slander.
Yeah, well, I've turned it to my advantage, and I'm now fully on his bandwagon. But just incredible what a job he's done. And going back to that coaches thing, yeah, okay, Mallorca and Cadiz both changed coaches, but they knew exactly what they wanted and who they wanted. And they got them in and they changed managers earlier. They knew they had a plan for when it went wrong, and it came off. And I think with Sergio, yeah, I mean, I said it all last time I was speaking about it. Like, the ambition that he's given, the way that Gareth believed against the bigger teams and didn't always get results, but picked up a few points. I mean, against Madrid, they could have won that game very easily, but that point turned out to be vital. And yeah, it's just full-on praise for him and what he's done with a squad that most of us didn't believe was good enough. And I think maybe Cadiz, within their minds, it had set in that they didn't think they were good enough. They didn't have the quality to stay up. But Sergio gave them that belief back, and the way that they took the game to the Real Madrids, to the Barcelonas, to the Atletis, I think that mindset was probably the difference between them staying up and going down, because yeah, they pulled out results when they really shouldn't have. And they've only lost four times since February the 5th against Mallorca, when they lost that match. And that they're all against teams in the top sort of 7 or 8. So, yeah, full-on credit to Sergio and an incredible effort from Cadiz to stay up. Because still, if we look at quality, probably in the bottom three.
Yeah, and of course, it could have been the story that it was Negredo's penalty miss last week, which ultimately cost them. That would have given them potentially a win over Real Madrid. But, yeah, I mean, incredible impact from Sergio. He came in, Álvaro Cervera, club legend, had taken 14 points from 20 matches, and then Sergio's come in and taken 25 from 18, so a clear upturn there in fortunes. That win at Camp Nou looking absolutely pivotal. And yeah, Granada, though, for their part, unbeaten against Barca and Atleti this season, and they've gone down. It's a cruel old game, this football, isn't it? But unfortunately, three teams have to go down, and it was Granada that fell today. Elsewhere in the bottom half, these fixtures didn't mean too much, but we'll have to mention them anyway. Elche won 3-1 over Getafe. A couple of late goals from Kike Pérez to give the home side a 3-1 win and their best ever La Liga points tally of 42 points. So congratulations to Elche. Rayo, for their part, they lost at home again, shipping another four goals to already relegated Levante. Levante signing off there with a nice win. They ended up only 4 points off salvation after all that. So once again, Lichy's impact, very positive. They'll be hoping to keep hold of him in Segunda. What else have we got? Valencia won against Celta on Saturday, which was the kind of randomly placed game Saturday afternoon. But of course, all the talk of that one was the protest off the pitch. Fans very much not happy with Peter Lim and Anil Murti in the week of the audios. So yeah, Roy, I'll just throw it to you. Any particular reflections on any of those games or teams as the season finishes?
Not especially. I mean, we could go into depth on Francisco and what a fantastic job he's done in terms of that. Lisky, I saw a very good tweet that was essentially just praising him, saying that if his name was Alessic Lischmacher or something along those lines, then we would all be praising him for what a tactical genius he was. Don't know if I go quite that far, but certainly there's a point to be made about how much he's gotten out of Levante in the second half of the season. And yeah, coming on to Valencia, Anil Murti and his audios, go and read about that in depth because we can't cover it well enough in this podcast. But just incredible photos to see Mestalla almost totally empty and the streets totally filled. And that's just kind of the visual impact of that. A photo's worth a thousand words. That's the cliche, but it applies here. And yeah, incredible effort from Libertad VCF who mobilized the support for that.
Yeah, check out Paco Pollitt's timeline, his Spanish account, or indeed his English account, for threads on the Murti audios and, of course, coverage of that very big protest outside Mestalla on Saturday. So, yes, that's the bottom half done. We're now going to hear from Alex Fitzpatrick, Mallorca fan. Very happy today. We did try and hook up Paul McGarrigy, but he's a little bit 11 points deep, I think you said, after Manchester City's title win today. So, yeah, it would have been an interesting conversation there, but we've got our very, very able deputy in Alex Fitzpatrick. So let's hear from him after Mallorca also secured safety with their first away win since before Christmas. And yeah, what a time to do it. It came at El Sadar 2-0. So you spoke to him a little earlier, and after that, we'll head to the break.
Mallorca! Bien lo ha hecho.
¡Gol de Angelito Rodríguez! ¡Recibe del gigante! ¡Recibe de Muriqui! Y Ángel, que tiene un olfato de goleador brutal, bestial, aguanta, retiene la pelota, busca la mejor ejecución y le dan un 9.99 de ejecución de gimnasia. ¡Perfecto!
I'm joined by Alex Fitzpatrick of the Spanish Segunda podcast, a jubilant Alex Fitzpatrick, I imagine. After Mallorca beat Osasuna 2-0 away from home, secured their safety. Alex, first of all, how are you doing?
Yeah, very good, as you might imagine after that result.
Yeah, it was an incredible occasion for Mallorca. They flew out their fans and they subsidised all their tickets. €50 it cost for a flight to and from Pamplona on the same day. And the ticket as well, which was, I thought, was pretty incredible from the club. But delving into the game itself, 2-0, it was quite tight for quite a long time. Eventually, they sort of go ahead through a beautiful Angel goal. And then later on, they get the second. Take us through the game and what you kind of thought of it from a Mallorca perspective. How good were they? Because they looked pretty solid to me.
Well, the first half was not pretty from a Mallorca point of view. Osasuna really came out in the beginning of the game and looked to get the goal. And it was, of course, our old centre forward Ante Budimir, who was the one who was on the end of everything and sniffing around looking for a goal. He didn't leave the club on good terms and hasn't really had a very good reception from Mallorca fans whenever there's been any contact between them since then. And I think you could see the determination in how he was playing, trying to get a goal. And he was very close on a few occasions in that first half. Mallorca weathered an early storm in the first half through the middle of the first half. They kind of took hold of it a little bit more. Salva Sevilla had a free kick, which was tipped over the bar. But then in the final sort of 5 to 10 minutes of that first half, Osasuna came again. And I think, you know, Mallorca were holding on a little bit, and halftime came at a really, really good point for them to get in at 0-0, as all the relegation games, of course, went in at 0-0. So they will have been delighted to go in at 0-0. And then the second half was very, very much different from the first, for sure.
Yeah, definitely. And Clément Grenier got the sort of goal that sealed it. Mariki was involved in both goals. And I think he's been possibly the January signing with Aubameyang of the window, so to speak. But just take me through kind of the reactions and the emotions. Because Mallorca, I mean, for a long time, they were kind of head above water. They slid into the relegation zone under Luis García. He obviously gets sacked. And Granada, 6-2 at home, you must have been thinking the very worst of it. What was it like? And just kind of sum up the groupthink reaction from Mallorca fans to staying up.
Well, you talked about Luis García Plata, and, you know, credit to him for getting the team up, but then for what he did in the first half of the season. But it really was on the slide in the second half of the season. I have to say that some of that was down to some unfortunate injuries and some issues. You know, that really derailed the season for Mallorca. But after six defeats in a row, they sacked him and in came Aguirre. He changed things in a way which Luis García Plata wouldn't. He was quite stubborn, Luis García Plata. And at that point, Mallorca fans really felt that they were going down. There was a downward trajectory. They didn't see how Mallorca could really dig themselves out of it. And Javier Aguirre coming in sort of changed that. They were narrowly defeated away to Getafe in their first game. And then I think they picked something up in the second game under Aguirre, and that really got the ball rolling. But as you say, the 6-2 defeat to Granada, and everybody thought that we were dead and buried once again. But then to come out from that and show the spirit and get a point away in Sevilla, and then get the really late winner from Abdon Prats against Rayo on the penultimate day of the season, to go into this game in Osasuna knowing that it was in our own hands and that if we won, we would stay up, was just incredible, really. I don't think Mallorca fans felt that they would be in that position after those six defeats in a row when Luis García Plata was sacked, and then it became seven defeats in a row after Javier Aguirre's first game in charge.
Yeah, it was very heartwarming scenes. There was tears in the stands were kind of being shown, and all sorts of emotions flying around at the end of the game. The Mallorca players obviously went across to the corner where the fans were, and it was sensational to see. It's exactly what you want from your final day of the season. Summing up the season, Mallorca obviously stay up. Objective achieved. This is a good season, is it? And kind of looking forward, do you think Aguirre is going to stick around?
Well, Aguirre will stick around. So in the after-match press conference, it's kind of been an open secret amongst the press that basically he had signed. And if he kept Mallorca up, then it would be extended automatically into a second year. So he will stay. And he, I understand, insisted on that on signing because in the past, he's been seen as sort of a relegation saviour and not always been successful with that, as we saw with Leganés a couple of years ago, although he got them incredibly close in tough circumstances. And I think what he wanted to guarantee when he took this job at Mallorca was that he would have a job next season if he managed to complete his objective. He didn't just want to come in as a firefighter, do nine games, even if he got the job done, be out of the door. He wanted really to have a job for a longer period of time than that. In terms of, is it a good season, objective completed? Well, no, it's not a good season at all. Mallorca, although they were out of the bottom three for incredibly long periods and only dropped into it for the first time when Luis García Plata was sacked, which some would see as as harsh. It's not been a great season for Mallorca. Some of that's been down to the recruitment by Pablo Ortiz, who's the sporting director. Some of it's been good, some of it's been woeful, and where the money has been spent, it's not been particularly spent well. For example, Matthew Hoppe, who came in from the Bundesliga for around about 2 to 3 million euros, has barely played at all. I don't think started any games, just come off the bench, not scored, and not been in with a sniff. And centre forward has been the position where Mallorca have really struggled. We talked about Budimir earlier. They have never replaced Budimir since he left, despite taking 8 million euros for his signing when he left to go to Osasuna at the beginning of last season. And they got to the halfway mark of the season and realised that the centre-forward position was really where they were lacking. And that's where Muriqi came in. You mentioned earlier he's been transformational. He has, not necessarily in terms of his goals, although his stats for goals and assists have been okay, but more in terms of his influence on the team, the fact that he's a focal point, the fact that he brings players in. And you saw from his assist to the first goal this evening where, you know, he played the lovely wall pass to Angel to get in on goal and get that shot away and score the opening goal of the game. How important he has been. He also wants to stay, but I think the price will be a bit of a sticking point.
Interesting. Fascinating to kind of get that nuance. It was great to sort of hear from you and get your thoughts on the final day of the season and a brilliant day for Mallorca. Excited to see what they do in the summer with Javier Aguirre. But thanks very much, Alex.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, definitely go and check out the Spanish Segunda show. Check them out on Twitter and go and listen to the podcast. Very few, if any, English language sources that will cover it in as much depth as they will. So go and check that out. But thank you, Alex.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Welcome back to La Liga Lowdown, our final match day recap of the season. In the top half, the only thing that was really on the line was the final European place, the UEFA Conference League, of course. It was between Athletic and Villarreal. And to be honest, I was kind of thinking Athletic had the odds, but Villarreal won at Camp Nou. So they become Spain's first representative in that competition. And Athletic, after falling at the Sanchez Pizjuan, finished eighth and just missing out. So you had a very interesting, insightful conversation with Beñat Gutiérrez, Athletic fan. He had some very interesting things to say on all things Athletic and Marcelino. So let's hear from him right now.
And I am joined by Beñat Gutiérrez to talk about Athletic Club. How are you doing, Beñat? A 1-0 defeat for Athletic on the final day of the season. But spirits, how are they?
Yeah, it's I guess it's the result we were expecting, considering how the season has gone. And it's not that I feel it's a big disappointment. Maybe there are going to be some commentary towards the attitude at the end of the game. But if you look at the season, and we'll have time to do it, it was unrealistic to think that Atleti was going to be able to reach a European competition spot. Actually, what is surprising is that after so many missed opportunities during the year, that Atleti reached this moment and reached the last day with a chance to get a spot for the conference. So there's many things to take care now. And those are going to be really, really important weeks for the future, the near future of Athletic Club, because in a couple of weeks, there'll be presidential elections, and that's going to shape the future of Athletic.
Yeah, we'll come on to them very shortly. 1-0 defeat in Sevilla, as I was saying, and Rafa Mir got the goal. Yuri had a goal disallowed. I mean, I was watching kind of the multi-goal coverage, so it was across the three games, but I kind of thought Athletic looked a little bit unlucky. Was that your kind of impression or your thoughts?
Yeah, there could be some situations where the game could have gone on a different way. Mm-hmm. It is true that the result of Villarreal was making this completely irrelevant. Mm-hmm. I feel that had an impact on the way Athletic played the last minutes of the game, where it felt a little bit lack of intensity. But I guess it's understandable because there was nothing on the line for them. Probably, you know, if the Yuri goal, obviously, it was a right decision by the referee. Then we can have an argument about if those rules make some sense. But that was the rule, and that was perfectly implemented that. And then we have another issues with the rules that probably are too far from the actual spirit of what the rules should be. But it was a tight game. It was the kind of game many people were expecting. And the problem is that once again, we didn't see an impressive Athletic on the day that mattered the most. And that was something I was getting a lot in Bilbao in the recent days. Obviously, when you're not depending on yourself to reach a goal, there's nothing you can do. You're depending, in this case, it was Barcelona and Villarreal. Mm-hmm. But I was seeing a lot of people saying, okay, you know what, like, it doesn't matter if we don't reach the conference. It's about having a good performance on a day that matters. And again, that didn't happen.
Yeah, interesting you say that. I did see a stat that it was of the last sort of seven games where Atleti could come within a point of Europe, they'd drawn two and lost the other five, which is pretty damning, and it kind of speaks to what you were saying. In terms of the season as a whole, yeah. Obviously, eighth place, semi-finals of the Copa del Rey. It was close, but not quite there. But how did you feel it went on the whole? Give us your assessment.
That's a great debate to have. We could probably take hours for this. The thing is that what happened with the Copa del Rey, very exciting. Athletic sent home Barcelona, sent home Real Madrid. But in the end, what happened is that Athletic did the work for other teams. They didn't have to beat them to win the Copa del Rey. Athletic was the useful dam in that sense in this Copa del Rey, which... Obviously, we shouldn't discredit that because it was a good performance. But after so many years where Athletic has been close to win a title in the Copa, that's not enough. At this point, it doesn't matter who you get to play with. It doesn't matter how. People here needs a title. And in that sense, the Copa del Rey felt a little bit like a disappointment after doing what felt like the most difficult part of the task, that then and again the team wasn't able to close the deal. And in the league, we were talking about it earlier, there have been so many missed opportunities. Every time that Atleti had a chance to reach a European competition spot, you knew that they were going to fail, and they failed. And it's quite surprising that they were able to make their chances till this day, till the last game of the season, because that was the the routine we were into. And there was almost a joke, like, okay, yeah, if we won two games and we're close to conference or even Europa League when that was reachable, there was that idea in the air that they were going to lose. And that happened a lot of times. And the team hasn't been able to get good results consistently during the season. That's why even there was sort of a hype in the last couple of weeks about reaching the Conference League, I don't think it was realistic because Athletic needed to get almost all the points. And that was something that didn't happen during the season. And there were no indicators that the team was doing the things particularly better to think that that was going to change. You know, to evaluate the season, now we need to put several things on a balance. And I feel the problem is that Athletic got in the middle of the way. I didn't deliver the results because not reaching a European spot is sort of disappointing. And at the same time, that renovation of the team, that clear confidence on the young players, that didn't happen either. It is true that there were some injuries, for example, at the end of the season with Sunset. But even considering the injuries, they are in key positions where there are players that seem to have a big future in the club that Marcelino has kept prioritizing veteran players that seem far from their best year. So I think we're going to have soon a verdict on the season, and we're going to have it with the elections and the decisions that are going to happen probably in the next couple of days.
Interesting. And obviously the elections play a big part. They take part sort of towards the end of June, mid to late June. Marcelino has said that there's a 50% chance that he won't be here next season. First of all, I want you to tell me if you think he's going to be there. Signs point to he's not. Second of all, the point was made on La Liga TV by Graham Hunter and Chepi Ferrer that they weren't sure who they were going to get in that's better than Marcelino. Is that the feeling in Bilbao? Do you feel like there's better out there? And so, yeah, do you think he's going to stay? And do you want him to stay, essentially?
Okay, so first one, I don't think he's going to stay. Mm-hmm. None of the two candidates that officially launched their campaigns put him as the first option. We already had some moments with Marcelino in the press conference when he seemed really, really upset that he wasn't the first option for any of those two candidates. It is true that while we're talking, rumors are growing that there's going to be a third candidate. But everything we know about this third candidate, the businessman Juno Uriarte, was pointing towards more international profiles for the coaching role and also for the whole Lezama direction. Apparently, he's really interested in the model of Red Bull Academy. And that's a thing we hear from other candidates. So it doesn't seem, I'm not sure either if Marcelino really wants to stay.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I get the feeling that he's looking for a way out, but not looking like he's the one who's saying like, you know what, like, I want to leave. But the important thing, and I think that's what makes this scenario so interesting for the elections, is that when you ask on the street, most of people want Marcelino to stay. Most of fans want Marcelino to stay. So it's clear for me that if a candidate can reach an agreement with Marcelino, that's the candidate who's going to win. But none of them seem to be keen on that. So it's really like it's a mind game.
Uh-huh.
I'm pretty sure that candidates are aware of this. So that's why I'm inclined to think that Marcelino is not so committed to stay here. Personally, I think Athletic needs someone who completely shakes the ground of the club in a way like Marcelo Bielsa did in the moment. Not because Marcelino is not doing a good job, because it seems that the team is stuck at the level, and it's been for a couple of years, and it's worth taking the risk and trying to see if we can get a little bit farther. And also because Marcelino is such a strict coach with his with the way he likes to play. And I'm not sure that he has the players to do it. And in other clubs, they could be like, okay, you know what? Like, we're going to just do a transition this summer. We're going to bring you the people you need. That can happen in Bilbao. So I don't see perspectives that he's going to be able to implement his idea of football better than he has done it at this point. And I feel what we've seen at this point is unfortunately not enough.
Fascinating. That is really, really interesting to hear those opinions, because I think obviously Athletic, they have their own kind of echo chamber and their own bubble.
Yeah.
And it's hard to sort of get into that unless you are on the ground, which is obviously why we came to you. But thank you so much for that, Benya. It was really fascinating to hear your thoughts on it.
Thanks for having me.
No problem. And yeah, hope it's a good summer at Athletic, and somebody who shakes it up comes in.
Thank you very much there to Benyat. Go and check him out on Twitter, being at Guti. Yeah, Rory then, Villarreal qualifying for Europe once again. The top seven in La Liga, exactly the same as last season. This is an achievement for Villarreal though, isn't it? To qualify for Europe again. It's something they give a lot of respect to, and was important, I think, after the Champions League semi-finals to be in Europe again.
Yeah, I think it's almost like a comical situation in the fact that Villarreal probably have a decent shot at winning the Conference League next year. And I wonder if we'll be back this time next year talking about Unai Emery's incredible European record and slightly disappointing league record again. Because, I mean, we all kind of thought before the season that Villarreal would be challenging for top four. It's where they should be. It's where their budget puts them. And frankly, where the squad puts them. So it's... Yeah, given the Champions League thing, the Champions League run, this is an incredibly good season for Villarreal. Let's make no bones about this. This is kind of once-in-a-lifetime stuff for people at La Cerámica, watching Bayern Munich, watching this great Liverpool side. So, yeah, putting that in context, it's been a really good season. But there's no doubt about it that this Conference League is a consolation prize for what's been an inconsistent league season. And there's mitigating factors, there's an injury to Gerard Moreno. But in terms of league form, Emery, he's probably on his last chance next season in terms of fixing that. And maybe he wins the Conference League and we're back here again. But I do think he needs to be at least putting up more of a fight to the likes of Sevilla.
Yes, well, of course, one of his failings in the league was always struggling to win against the big sides. That's exactly what they did today. A 2-0 win at Camp Nou. His first win there, his first result of any kind of positive nature after 13 consecutive defeats at Camp Nou, including, of course, that brutal 6-1 in the Champions League, which you were there for. Not jealous at all. And then, yeah, so a great one for Emery to finish the season on. He seemed very, very happy with that on a personal level and, of course, for Villarreal. On to Barca then, another home defeat, too many of those this season. I think it's a record that goes back to the 80s, the last time they lost as many at home in the league. But progress under Xavi or still work to be done in the summer?
Yeah, I mean, if you'd cut off the season in about mid-April, it would have been absolutely fine. I think Barcelona, they've not been great since then, and I think more than anything else, all it's done is drive up the frustration levels of Xavi. I think you could see him on the touchline with veins pulsing and echoing a lot of the sort of feelings of some of the fans. I mean, look at today. Barcelona beat themselves almost as much as Villarreal did. Adama Traore, first goal, he doesn't track his runner and very clearly gets beaten in a foot race when he's faster than Pedraza. Because he's not paying attention, and then for the second goal assists Moy Gomez in quite simply the worst piece of defending I think I've seen all season. So yeah, I mean, I don't want to sort of beat on Adama on his probably his last appearance in the Camp Nou, but what can you do about that kind of stuff? I mean, you don't even see that in kids football, the second one. It's really, really grim. Is there work for Xavi to do? Yes, of course. I think Xavi, and then certainly sort of latter stages of this season, we've seen a team that's tired mentally. We've seen a very formulaic style of attack. I think that's the main sort of issue to deal with. I mean, even today you saw them getting out wide a lot. And I agree that if there's a lot of players in the centre, you need to attack the wings. That's fundamental. I understand that. But the complete lack of invention and lack of trust in their own quality to get through the middle, I think that's a problem too. And I think that you make yourself one-dimensional if you're going out to the wings as well. So, yeah, I think Xavi does need to fix that. He needs to work on it. But ultimately, it's just good that it's the end of the season for Barcelona. They need to come back refreshed with a different mentality. As Dani Alves said, whether he'll be there, I don't know, with some new players and completely kind of reset again.
Yeah, big summer ahead. The futures of Lewandowski, Dembele, and many others up in the air. Plenty of work for sporting director to do, I'm sure. Elsewhere in the top half then, Real Madrid closed their successful Champions season with a 0-0 draw at home to Real Betis. There was a doble pasillo, both teams giving each other a guard of honour for their respective triumphs this season. But of course, it was a 0-0 draw, which both teams are pretty happy with in the end. Real Madrid, of course, looking ahead to Paris, but losing out on Kylian Mbappe, who committed his future to Paris Saint-Germain. We'll probably have more time to talk about that in future. But for now, at least, that ended goalless. Elsewhere, Atletico Madrid won 2-1 at Anoeta to close an indifferent season for them. But nice for them to end with a win. It means they finished third ahead of Sevilla. And again, in every one of Simeone's seasons, he has finished in the top three. So another kind of tick in that box. Rory, any reflections on that kind of top half? We've spoken about Athletic, but yeah, Sevilla getting a win as well. The fans chanting Lopetegui's name at the end of the game, so potentially he might stay.
Yeah, I think that's probably the most interesting detail from those games. I think Monchi seems to be convinced that Lopetegui is his man, that he's going to stay and that he is the man to take them forward. Whether he is, we'll find out. I think if he does stay, then the recruitment needs to be really good this summer. I think they need to change, they need to hit on a striker, regardless of how much potential you think the two up top have. And Rafa Mir got a really nice goal today, it should be said. But yeah, I think if Lopetegui is staying, I think there'll need to be a bit of a turnover of the squad just to freshen things up there.
Yes, indeed. Well, after 380 games and 951 goals, that is the end of the La Liga season. But it's not the end of this podcast. We still have MVP to come. So, Rory, who is your first pick, please?
My first pick, I'm going to go with Gonzalo Melero, who's, I think, well, he scored two goals and he was pretty good for Levante in a pretty open game. And Melero is one of those that you wonder if he's going to end up somewhere else this season, or next season, sorry. Definitely scored a couple of very nice goals. And there's one where he's sort of, he has the option open and he's outside edge of the box, but just doesn't bother with it. Just finishes into the corner very calmly. And he wasn't celebrating too much, but yeah, he's a quality player and that's why I'm going for him.
My first pick's a little bit niche, but I'm going to go with Quique Pérez. Two goals off the bench for Elche. It was 1-1 with Getafe at the time, but he comes on with about 20 minutes to go and scores two late goals, takes them very well to give Elche that kind of resounding home win. They were the ones celebrating on the final day last season with their salvation after jumping out of the bottom three, but all much calmer this time around, having sealed survival. And yeah, nice for Quique Pérez to get that brace. He's the first Elche sub to score a brace in the 21st century, interestingly enough. And yeah, so good signs there for Francisco. He's committed his future for next season too, Elche centenary year. So yeah, nice end to the season for Quique Pérez and Elche. Who would you like to pick for your second choice?
Second choice is Ferhat Morici, or Morici. Just brilliant impact. I mean, I mentioned it with Alex. The goal, especially Angel, the sort of wall pass that he plays is absolutely genius. I think there's something intensely satisfying about seeing a large, supposedly not technically very gifted player playing sort of passes like that. The second goal, it's his physical presence that makes a difference and leads to Grenier's goal. And yeah, he has embodied Mallorca under Aguirre especially, but in this second half of the season, his impact has been massive. And without him, their attack lacks a lot of direction. But he's come up big for them time and time again. As Alex mentioned, even when he's not getting all of the goals or all of the assists, he's such a focal point for that attack. And strikers, they are quintessential part of the kind of relegation battle. And if you can find one that gives you an edge over certainly other teams, as Marici did, well, then they're worth their weight in gold.
Absolutely. Another fantastic performance from the Pirate. I'm going to steal one from one of your favourites for my final pick of the season. I'm going to go with Pacha Espino from Cádiz. Again, everything on the line, travelling to Manifrota, it's chucking down with rain. It's everything set up to be one of those kind of a game where both teams come out and both feel deflated and defeated. But no, Pacha Espino was determined not to be on the losing side. Three clearances, three interceptions, 13 recoveries, 10 duels won. He's just the all-round perfect fullback, isn't he? And his energy is just incombustible. He's just up and down, tearing down that flank. And yeah, what a player he's been for Cádiz. And if they can keep him, then that'll be an achievement in itself, I think, because I think a lot of clubs will be looking at him a bit like Javi Galán last season and thinking, do you know what, we can probably steal this guy for a cheap fee and upgrade that position. So yeah, a great moment from Lozano to get the goal. He deserved it, of course, but also I'm going to go with Pacha for his all-round performance and kind of committed display and his celebration at the end, which was magnificent. right then, so that's it. It's time for moments now, our final moments of the week. Rory, I'm going to go with Real Sociedad, actually, because I know they lost on the night, but they fought till the end. They got a late goal into added time, which gave them belief. It was, again, in the Basque Country. It was absolutely bucketing down with the rain. Now, you see the players' shirts at the end of the game. They're sticking to the skin. It's that wet. But the Real Sociedad fans, they didn't care one bit. They were still celebrating. It wasn't full by the end, of course, but the fans that were there were enjoying themselves, partying. And they've got another season of Europe to look ahead to. So they're definitely very optimistic for the future with Imanol in charge. But yeah, I'm going to leave the final moment to you, Rory. So what's your pick?
Yeah, I could have gone with either something Mallorca or Cádiz related. There was tears in the stands at Osasuna from a Mallorca point of view. But my favourite part of the celebrations was for Cádiz. Was the injured Ivan Alejo, who was in the stands with the Cádiz fans, and then sort of hop, skipping and jumping all the way down when they scored. And yeah, that was very comical to watch. But yeah, just in general, the Cádiz fans, as you say, it was absolutely peeing it down in the Basque Country at Mendizorroza as well. And just to see a big large bunch of Andaluces on a Sunday night, really late on, it was kind of 9:10 p.m. having a good old sing song with their team, having survived right in the corner of Mendizorroza, was that's what football's all about. It was brilliant to see and very enjoyable to watch.
It really was, and the best thing about that is as well that the club have said that at 3 a.m. that they're going to be touching back down in Cádiz. They're going to celebrate with their fans in one of the squares in Cádiz. Of course, by the time you're hearing this, listener, that will already have passed, but I'm sure there'll be plenty of videos and photos on social media, so check that out. Yeah, Cádiz very much celebrating their permanence, as they say in Spain, in La Liga. So yeah, that's it. That's all we've got time for. Match day 38, the season is over in La Liga. The season does not end here, though, because we've got that massive Champions League final, Real Madrid against Liverpool in Paris next Saturday. Kylian Mbappe said he's going to be Madrid's number one fan. I'm not sure if they really want him to be anymore, but hey-ho. So yeah, all that remains is to say thank you very much to Rory for your contributions tonight and all season long, and to Benyat and Alex today. We will have a season review podcast coming out. We're not entirely sure when that will be, but it will be coming out in the next couple of weeks. So stay tuned for that. Where me, Rory and Sam will be on there to discuss all things and kind of evaluate the season as a whole and various different clubs and how they performed. But for now, thank you very much for listening for throughout the season. It's been a pleasure bringing you these podcasts. I hope you've enjoyed it. Commiserations to the relegated sides and congratulations to the champions Real Madrid and all those sides that have achieved their objectives. We'll be back next season for many more, but for now, adios.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.